Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello everybody, welcome to your Monday edition of the Blood Red Podcast here from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Theo Squires, and joining me today is our Liverpool correspondent home and away, Paul Gorst. How are you, Gorsty?
Good, very tired. We got back quite late last night than me and then straight back into the office for our podcast recordings to pick the bones out of yesterday's deserved defeat. But other than that, okay, can't complain.
And to my left, Ian Doyle. How are you, Doyle?
Hello. I'm okay, tired.
Yeah, I'm okay. I wasn't in London, so well.
Yeah, you weren't.
I'm all right. I'm hoping that you're warm enough that you remembered your coat this time.
Yes, well, we've been back twice now, so yeah, it's all good.
But yeah, as Gorsty's just referenced there, obviously it wasn't the best performance against Arsenal, was it, yesterday? Pretty deflating defeat after doing so well against Chelsea in midweek. Mm. Never really looked like scoring. Where do you think it went wrong, Gorsty?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't helped really, were they? Like, Szoboszlai missing, Darwin Núñez was only fit enough for the bench. Weirdly, Conor Bradley was a big miss. Obviously, the death of his father over the weekend sees that take precedence, and Trent Alexander-Arnold had to step in, and he didn't look fit at all, did he? And it was just a case of one too many absentees hitting Liverpool at the wrong time. You know, I think they managed to kind of navigate that really well in the last few months with so many injuries and absentees, and, you know, no Salah, no Endo as well. And this was just a game too far for them against a really good team who were going for the Premier League themselves, you know, at their ground. So Liverpool just struggled to put anything together. They lacked a bit of cohesion, and they certainly weren't making things stick up top. With Cody Gakpo, who I thought was off the pace, Ryan Gravenberch struggled as well. I thought McAllister was getting left too isolated at times in midfield. And then the big one is the mistake, isn't it, between Alisson and Van Dijk. And I'm sure, you know, I think if you ask 10 people, you'd get 5 different answers as to who was responsible for the goal. I've read Dudley's analysis before, and he mentioned about Joe Gomez being the only one who really kind of did himself any justice in terms of his form at the back, and couldn't really disagree with that. Jota was quiet, wasn't he, considering the form that he's been in. Núñez, like I say, didn't really look fit. So across the board, really, Liverpool were well off the pace, but I don't think it's a time to panic. You know, it's only the second defeat in 10 months in the Premier League. And the other one was obviously the farce that was Tottenham, with two men sent off and the VAR controversy and the own goal and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, just beaten by a better team on the day, and there were some mitigating circumstances around it. But I think the way Liverpool are at the moment, I don't think it's going to kind of have like an adverse impact on them in the coming weeks. I think they'll be able to shake it off quite well, starting with Burnley on Saturday, and the fact that they've got 6 days between those fixtures is huge, really. A chance to rest some muscles and get a few players back.
And Doyle, the way you look at the season so far, when Liverpool started it, they were having red cards, there were injuries, they were still finding a way to win. And then for the last 2 months, with all these absentees, you've seen they're still finding a way to win. It isn't a surprise at a time when it does come a step too far, when you go to a place like Arsenal, which you've said, I think, before we recorded, second toughest game of the season, pretty much.
Well, that's it. It is the second toughest game, so forget everything else. If you lose that game, you're not exactly going to go, we need an inquiry on this, we need an inquest, we need to work out what's gone. I mean, Gorsi had just been through it all and why they lost, and it'd be more of a worry if none of those things had happened. Then you'd be like, hang on, what's happened there? Mm. Why have they managed to do that? So there's no excuses, there's reasons for the performance, and that's basically it. I mean, I don't necessarily think Arsenal were even that great. I thought Arsenal played better at Anfield and played better in the first half in the FA Cup game. But in those two, Liverpool played better. And I think we can go on to Arsenal celebrations in a bit. I'm sure we mentioned them. I've got a view on that. But just the game as a whole, I mean, there was too many of the... I mean, it doesn't help when too many of the players just play poorly. They look tired.
Yeah.
I mean, me and Gorse, they look tired as well, to be honest. We were tired. And... You know, I mean, look, I wasn't going to mention this, but I'm going to mention it. If you build yourself as a squad that is together and you're like a family unit and this, that and the other, when something happens to one of your family members and something happens, then it's going to affect you a little bit. I'm not saying that's the reason for the game, but it's another...
Do you mean Conor Bradley?
It's another complication on top of that. Just the general feeling of the group itself. I mean, I don't necessarily think that had any impact in terms of the performance, but it's just one other thing, isn't it? But just going back to the game itself, yeah, there were players who, you mentioned Ryan Gravenberch, but you can kind of excuse him a little bit, still only 21, still getting used to playing in games like that. You can't really excuse, you know, Alisson doesn't make many mistakes, but he seems to do it
in slightly bigger games,
doesn't it? Yeah. Is that a concern? I don't know. You mean he was man of the match in a Champions League final. You don't get a bigger game than that. So not a concern, but it was just unfortunate. You're talking about the mistake for the first goal where both Van Dijk and Alisson are at fault, but the difference is Alisson can see it all. So...
For the second Arsenal goal.
So I think for that, you've got Alisson has to take the majority.
The man coming forward, isn't it? That was always the rule when you played Sunday League or whatever. The man coming forward takes the ball and the fellow that's back to goal gets out the way.
Yeah, so I do think Alisson, he could see it all happening and yeah, it was just like, you could see it coming a mile up as well, couldn't you? It's not the first time that they'd had a bit of issue with just a long ball, which of all teams, Arsenal, who pride themselves on not doing that. I think Liverpool got tactically bits wrong as well, whether or that. Or not, that's down to the players who were available. I don't know, but Ghosty mentioned Jota and Gravenberch and Trent, and that's the right side. So if you've got those three players not performing to the best of their abilities, and Gakpo, as you mentioned, it wasn't really sticking, and on the other side, Diaz only became a threat really in the first half when he started moving away from the left wing because he wasn't getting much, hitting diagonals to him to challenge with Ben White, who's a centre back turned into a right back. He's not going to win many of them. It was when he then started flitting around and going into other positions is how he forced the equaliser. So I do think Liverpool could have done everything. Even the subs didn't really work, did they?
No.
Then again, Nunes wasn't properly fit either. So in retrospect, I know Klopp said after the game, he said, I would have picked the same team again without having seen the game, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't be drawn on. Would he have changed it if he'd have known how it was going to go on? Because you obviously would have done. I mean, I'd have probably played Harvey Elliott, to be honest, instead of Gravenberch. But it was just one of those things. And I think even Canati just didn't... He looked a bit concerned in the first half. He was better in the second half, actually, up against Martinelli. But then, you know, the sending off was a bit soft. But, you know, by then, it didn't really matter that much. I don't think Liverpool were never going to win that game. And they didn't. Can we do the Arsenal celebrations now, by the way?
Yeah, if you want to do Arsenal celebrations now.
There's nothing wrong with Arsenal celebrating the win. The problem is that they've got to back it up now. As far as I'm concerned, if they don't win the league now, what's just happened then will be completely embarrassing and everybody will look back at it. So it's on them now. They've given themselves a little bit of pressure to win the league.
Yeah, I mean, it's water off the duck's back for me. You know, team celebrating and whatever else. But it was interesting. You could tell how much it meant to everyone. You know, obviously, Odegaard with the photographer. There was that scene by everyone, wasn't it? But I was in the mix zone after the game, and Gunnosaurus, of all beings...
Gunnosaurus is my favourite footballer.
The mascot, of course, the famous Arsenal mascot, was lapping up the celebrations in the mix zone. And then Piers Morgan came out, and he made sure that everybody seen and heard that he was in the vicinity, backslapping, and loads of uproar with his laughter, and pictures with Bukayo Saka, and yeah, I mean, Arteta as well. You know, he was running down the wing, wasn't he, like the Ultimate Warrior, and the 90s tagging all the fans.
You were desperate to get the Ultimate Warrior reference, weren't you? You asked me at the game. Do you reckon I could mention this? Yeah, it is way too niche.
It's not too niche on the pod.
They're always talking about wrestling on this pod.
I know.
So what move would you put on Theo?
I'd kick his ankles first, wouldn't I?
Yeah, you wouldn't even, when you weren't even trying to do it. You just do it and you walk past him and you were near him.
And Lee Dixon as well, he was pitch side for NBC, and then kind of when it went to an advertisement break, he was like that to the fans, and you were all clapping and cheering them. You know, it certainly meant a lot for Arsenal yesterday, didn't it?
Do you think it was more of a, because it was more of a must win game for Arsenal than Liverpool, that kind of was reflected?
And also as well, you know, Liverpool are still a scalp even for big teams, similarly big teams like Arsenal, aren't they? Particularly when they've only lost one all season, and that was, there was loads of mitigation around that one. So yeah, it certainly meant a lot to everyone connected to Arsenal, and I suppose Liverpool can at least console themselves with the fact that it just means that their lead is cut, as opposed to them being cut adrift from the title race entirely, and they're still well in the thick of it.
Well, I was quite dismissive of Arsenal on Friday, and I stand by that. Like, they can decide who wins the title, but they're not going to win it themselves. Like, they can win these one-off games, they can go strong in the Champions League this year, but the fact that those celebrations, it just looks like they're a bit a step before that. They're not a side that is used to going right until the end of the season and knows that you keep going, keep going, keep going.
I never thought Arsenal would win the league, and having seen them now, I'd be amazed if they won it. Be absolutely amazed. Then again, I'd be amazed if Liverpool won it. I think I got a lot of grief recently for being negative towards Liverpool. Well, it's not. They're massively ahead of where they should be this season. Yeah. Massively ahead. And they can still easily go off and win three trophies, but they're not going to win the league. They can win it, but I don't think that they will. I think City would have to do something really strange to not win it from this now.
Well, obviously, whenever you play Arsenal, whenever you go to the Emirates, there's always the talk of Liverpool's record against these bigger sides. It's not been the best this season. And if you look at every single game against Arsenal for the last 2 years, it's got that same pattern of Arsenal start really well, Liverpool wait until the second half to get going. This is that case where they didn't even get going there.
Yeah.
Is this starting to get into a bit of a concern for you, Gorsu?
Yeah and no. I mean, you know, it's a game that you should be winning, that you have to win, really, don't you? I was saying on Friday, wasn't I think that Liverpool have to win every game at Anfield now, between now and the end of the season. That obviously includes Manchester City, but they've got a really good record against them at home. They haven't been lost for 20 odd years, 21 years, is it?
Apart from the one where nobody was there.
You keep forgetting about this one, don't I? Yeah. So that was, what, 3-4 years ago now? 3 years?
Three.
When there was the no fans.
Wow.
Yeah.
It seems like forever ago.
That was another Alisson.
Yeah, that was another one, yeah.
And that was another death in the squad as well.
Anyway, can we even know?
But yeah, I mean, I'm not overly concerned by that record. I think you did a little analysis on it, didn't you? You know better than me what the facts and the stats are.
If you're talking about what some of our colleagues call the Sky Six, which would be Man United, Man City, Chelsea, Tottenham and Arsenal.
Tottenham in there?
Tottenham not being in there, but it just amuses me the way
some people get annoyed at this Sky Six, and what do you mean it's Liverpool? Let's face it.
Yeah. So anyway, Liverpool have played 7 games against them and taken 7 points. Now, obviously, you play 10 games because overall home and away. So they got 7 points from 7 games, and of the 3 remaining, they got 2 at home, which is Tottenham and City, and they've got United away. Arsenal have played 6, and they got 12 points. So the reason Arsenal are up there because they've beaten City at home.
Yeah.
They've beaten Liverpool at home. They've beaten United at home. There's 9 of them, and they've drawn at Chelsea, they've drawn at home to Tottenham, and they've drawn at Anfield. So that's where the 12 points come from. The thing is, if you extend it to include Newcastle and Aston Villa, who are obviously two of the bigger teams at the moment, so what would that be? The TNT Sport 8.
Yeah.
then Liverpool are actually top of that league, but they played way more of them than the rest. I mean, the only...
They've gotten much kinder running if you look at the fixtures from this point.
I mean, I think City have got the easiest run of the whole lot. I think.
Don't know, they've got a really tough march coming up.
Well, you've got something lined up, haven't you, about that? So, what is City's march?
I'm sure they haven't got that many hard games left.
They've got United, Liverpool, Brighton, Arsenal, and Villa, I think, in succession.
But Villa's at home.
Yeah, a few of them are at home. And they've still got like Chelsea and Tottenham in April. Like, granted,
that's at home.
Yeah,
Chelsea.
That's the thing. Most of the City's games are at home. So if you're a Liverpool perspective, the point of view, you've just got to make sure you beat them at Anfield and that you're still in touch. And
but if Liverpool win all their games this season, they won the league. Simple as.
So they're
still in control of the destiny, but no one's expecting them to win 15 games in a row now.
But what you do when it's Man City.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, City have got six at the moment, haven't they? since before Christmas. Since The Everton game, was it?
Yeah, since they came back from
the
thingamajig, yeah.
Moving on to another talking point, the Konate red card, two bookable
offences.
I'll be
honest, I haven't seen a replay of it because we were too busy doing the work, so I never thought, like, when he went off, I just went, oh, it's just one of them. You've seen it so many times.
You can't really get out the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's in Arsenal's third of the pitch.
And the crowd are up and they're on the attack and this, that, and the other. You can see why it got booked, so I wouldn't complain too much about that. But I would say that Klopp was probably at a point where he said, possibly an Arsenal player did something similar not long afterwards.
Yeah. Gabriel wrestled Nunes to the ground in the centre circle, and Nunes gets booked for kicking off about it. I mean, obviously, watching it was a bit of a biased eye in terms of we know what happens with Liverpool more than other teams, but I don't think I've seen another player for another team booked for dissent in the same way Liverpool seem to get a lot of theirs booked.
Has anyone else been booked? Because McAllister got booked for, you know, imaginary yellow card.
Yeah, Chelsea on the opening day, yeah. I haven't seen much of that.
There must be some ball. I mean, as you say, you know,
kicking the ball away, remember that? That was a big directive
that's
early in the season,
twice,
wasn't
it? But then
well,
Arsenal
don't forget,
got for the
don't forget AU got sent off for Palace for actually just get standing near a free kick. So there is that. Liverpool aren't the only ones who had a soft yellow red card this season for two yellows.
But he misses Burnley now, of course. So Konsa or Gomez. What happens there? Robertson back. Some questions for Klopp, really. Now, you know, how fit is Trent? I didn't look fit at all, did he, yesterday?
No, I didn't think he was anywhere near. It was interesting that Klopp did say after the game, he said the plan was never for Trent to last the 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's
like,
well, he was your best player at Arsenal a month earlier when he did pick up the injury. So that just suggests they knew quite well. He was just, I think if Conor Bradley had been available, he'd have started.
And also as well with Gomez playing the inverted role as opposed to Trent.
That will be because of his fitness. That will 100% be because he didn't want him moving into there. Because it would have made more sense because there was times where Liverpool were getting a little bit overrun in midfield.
And also maybe they've worked on it in the week with the plan to play Bradley as opposed to Alexander-Arnold. Yeah, so it wasn't ideal preparation, was it? But, you know, these are the things you have to try and overcome. And unfortunately, they couldn't.
Trent, he always seems to have it a bit more difficult when he's up against Arsenal. He's up against Martinelli. He was looking a bit sloppy on the ball.
I don't necessarily think it was an Arsenal-related thing. It would have been like that against anyone.
Fair enough, then. Moving on to the next one. We've already touched on the individual performances, but I think it's two that we should focus on a bit more, and that's Gravenberch and Gakpo. Like, these are two players who have come into the starting 11 because of absences elsewhere. It's an opportunity for them to step up, and they haven't delivered, and it's not the first time we've been saying this season. Obviously,
you've been a bit harsh on Gakpo there, I think.
I thought he was quiet.
I meant just they haven't delivered this season. I think he scored.
He's scored a decent amount of goals, but
he's
in and out the side, and when he gets in, it's usually when he's quieter. He makes more of an impact off the bench, is what I mean when I say that. It's just they were two players that you wanted them to be a bit fresher, step up, because they haven't played as much football, and they were probably two of the quieter performances.
Well, Gravenberch in the last game at Chelsea, wasn't it? That was the first time this season that he's not played when he's been available. He normally either starts or comes off the bench and features at some point. I actually thought he'd done all right in the last couple of games he played. And, you know, I've been quite mindful of not being overly critical of him because he's obviously didn't play much last season. He's only 21, etc. He does have some reason for it. But having said that, he just had not a very good game. Just didn't affect the game at all.
I think that's the problem. Poor. It was just ineffective.
And he wasn't the only one, but because of the position he's in, and what he can do. Liverpool wanted him to do a job which he just didn't do, and that's where the whole of the right side fell off, especially when you need him to step up because of the reason we've just mentioned about Trent not being fully fit and Jota not really being a right winger.
Yeah, I mean, in Gakpo's defence, I suppose it's a bit awkward when you're not really settled in the team, a settled fixture, you're coming in, maybe you're playing off the left, playing down the middle, maybe even as a midfielder in the 4-2-3-1. I think Nunes has shown this season that he has to be starting when he's fit, but, you know, unfortunately he wasn't, was he? He left Chelsea in that protective boot, which I think the fact that Klopp, we said on Friday, didn't we, the fact that Klopp offered that up in his press conference probably said that it wasn't as, you know, it wasn't a big thing as it might have sounded, you know, leaving in a protective boot. But the fact that he didn't start him probably does say that he wasn't near top level, and I think he showed that when he came on. He didn't really do much, did he? That moment he kind of jinked past, I can't remember who it was now, was it Kivior? And then he just blasted it into the crowd. And off day for Nunes, not fit, and Gakpo didn't really take his chance, did he, with a big start in a big game?
When you look at the Chelsea game, it was that right-hand side that was so effective with Nunes as well, when Bradley, Szoboszlai. It's just a shame they couldn't build on that because you've essentially taken that out of the team.
Yeah. Also, Chelsea aren't very good.
That too. But moving on from that, another player we can focus on is Thiago. That was one positive he can take away from the weekend.
The only positive, yeah.
He is finally back.
He is, and you're going to have to be patient with him because he hasn't... The game yesterday was a year to the day since his last start, which came at Wolves. He hasn't played at all since late April, I think it was the West Ham game. So you're going to have to be mindful of that. You're going to have to be mindful of the fact that this is a player who's not 24, 25, he's 32 now, is he? Brilliant player. But you've got a theory, haven't you? You don't know where he's going to get minutes. I mean, I like the idea of him having a say on the running, and it's great to have him back. But I think we might just have to be a little bit patient with him, and maybe he can start contributing significantly. And once he gets a little bit of rhythm and momentum, but at the moment it's difficult to see where he might get that.
Well, this is the problem. It's not just Thiago. It's say Bacetic comes back before the end of the season, which they're expecting. We're seeing it with Robertson now. We're probably going to see it with Tsimikas as well when he comes back.
Seeing it a bit with Trent.
We're seeing a bit with Trent. I wonder. Salah, I think, is a different case. I think he's just always fit. And we might have to see it with Szoboszlai because he's come straight back in and got injured again straight away. We're still waiting to find out just how bad that is. But the suggestion is he's possibly may have done his hamstring again. Whether
it's the same injury.
It's the same. Whether that's going to be...
Was he in the pictures? Yeah.
I think he was, yeah. But
so whether he's done it there... It's relevant when he's done it. The problem is he has done it. But Liverpool have now reached that stage of the season where the only thing you could argue is possible one of the legs of the Europa League games in the next couple of rounds, depending on who they play.
The FA Cup is a good option.
I know you reckon, but Liverpool have reached that stage now where it's you've got to win every game. They're in that stage of the season. They've only got one League Cup game left.
I'd say you could start Luton before the League Cup final. It's a midweek when you're playing three times in a week.
But at home. But then it depends on who's available, because you go, well, if you put Thiago into the starting lineup there, Endo's going to be coming back. That's good news. You've got McAllister, but he probably needs to be rotated because he can't play all the time. The Curtis Jones, we've seen Gravenberch needs to find a bit of form. Harvey Elliott, for some reason, he's not quite getting the minutes that he was doing. So there are players there to do it, but that's been on point. So it's like, well, great. So when's Thiago getting his minutes then? When's Tsimikas going to get it? Do you want to really drop Gomez for a game when he's been playing so well, just so Robertson can come in? Robertson will get his games eventually. But it's timing it right for these games, because every single one is must win, must win, must win, must win.
Yeah, I think Thiago's worth the risk, though, in terms of putting him in for a Norwich, ahead of other players you might need the rhythm.
Norwich? Don't play Norwich again.
No, that's sorry.
Watford or Southampton?
Just used to play Norwich about six times in 3 years, or eight times in 3 years. I think he's a little bit of a special case, because we know when he's at his top level what he can do and how much he can influence games, and that could be priceless for Liverpool in the coming weeks. So I think you're looking at maybe getting him in the side wherever you can. Luton is a good shout. Watford or Southampton in the Cup is a good shout.
Southampton?
Norwich would have been a good shout.
No, Norwich would have been a good shout, but he wasn't there for that.
But yeah,
well, James McConnell played in that one.
He did, I do think they will need to be patient with him and give him time and space to get. I don't think he maybe even gets to his absolute top level before the end of the season, given how much football he's missed, but he doesn't need to be, because he can still influence things, when he's near that level.
Can I just go back to something you said earlier to Mr. PG over there about, is it a concern that Arsenal are now doing all this against Liverpool? Well, the fact is, that's it. It's done. Klopp is never going to manage against Arsenal again. And I think it's almost like everything that's gone before. Once you get to the end of the season, you can just draw a line through it, because there's going to be a new manager, whoever it is, and there will be obviously the same players, or mostly the same players. There's going to be different tactics, there's going to be a different approach. Even if it's just a little bit, it's certainly going to be different, because every single manager is different.
Well, and the coach will be one of the most interesting ones, then, if it is Xavi Alonso.
The thing is that there's always teams that some teams struggle against, or managers can't overcome, or they learn from this, that, and the other. So I think questions like that are redundant, because we know that the manager's going at the end of the season, so is the main part of the coaching staff as well. So I just actually think that's quite interesting, whether or not Klopp in games to come just goes, well, I'm just going to try something really, really strange here, like he has done against Man City in the past a few times, because it doesn't matter whether people try to learn from this, because I'll be gone by the end of the season.
Which is part of the reason why I think he said the documentary's okay, because whatever he says in the dressing room, it's not going to be a thing next year.
But don't even, they're not going into the dressing room on it, though, are they?
No.
Whatever they capture anyway, it doesn't impact his Liverpool.
Boundaries have been set as well. Really,
hopefully not in the press room as well. They can stay away from us.
We'll move on to the title race now. Obviously, at the time of recording, Man City haven't played yet, so they've currently got two games in hand.
So anybody listening to this Tuesday, Manchester City just beat Brentford.
Ivan Tony scores dramatically more than as Brentford.
Never know. Brentford did do them last year, didn't they, before the World Cup. Yeah. So let's be positive. But yeah, it's obviously a six-pointer where Arsenal have got those points to narrow the gap. Klopp said after the game, you always expect City to win every match anyway. How costly do we reckon this will be on the title race? And I'm asking you this, Gorski, because I know Doyle's just going to say, I never expected Liverpool to win the title.
Before we go any further, before you answer, costly, they lost against, they lost their second hardest game of the season. Okay, arguably third, because I'd say City at home and City away.
Mm.
City away, then City at home, then
the City games.
Arsenal away. Right, they're the three hardest games. They drawn one of them, they got one to come, and they lost one of them. You know, and you look at City lost at Arsenal.
I don't expect Liverpool to win the league. I don't think I really have, but it's more just the kind of the promise that it's going to be an exciting run in, and they could, you know, as long as they put a chance, you know, you're still kind of invested in it, aren't you? So I still think they've got a good chance of having a good crack at it and see what happens. It's a difficult game that they lost, and there's no need to panic at all. I think Liverpool have shown that, you know, had they not at the howler for the second goal, I think there's a case you can make with Liverpool comfortable and get a draw at least, because, you know, they were really poor in that first half, in, like we've mentioned, one of the toughest away games of the season, and somehow managed to stay in it just because they've got a bit of character and resilience and never really know when they're beaten. Obviously things turned on that mistake and then obviously the sending off and whatever else, but I don't think it's the kind of result or performance where you think the wheels are going to fall off for Liverpool now. I think they're too mentally strong for that to happen. But whether that wins them the title, we'll see. Still make City favourites, I've done for a while, really. But I think I've had this with you for a while on this pod. I still think the lowest Liverpool will finish as second, and they're certainly not going to finish below third.
When you look at the fixtures coming up, Burnley, Brentford, Luton, they've at least got a nice run before that cup final to bounce back to make sure it doesn't.
Brentford's the game there, isn't it? Brentford, because they got tonked there last year and they drew the year before. So anyone who thinks that's going to be easy, as you mentioned, Ivan Tony, it's Ivan, isn't it? I always say Ivan, then I always think it's wrong. that he'll be up for. He didn't even play last time when they got beat. When they got beat 3-1, he didn't play in that game, did he?
No, but Bremo, he's injured for this one, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's missed
Bremer does as well against Liverpool and City as well.
Does Vissa, doesn't he?
That's a tough game. Yeah, the home ones. City are the favourites to win the league, and I think they'll win it. That doesn't mean that I don't think Liverpool can't win it, or that they won't be there all the way towards the end of the season. That's why these next three games are important, because the not just Liverpool, but most teams look at games in blocks, don't they? Sometimes it's blocks of five, blocks. Liverpool would have looked at, I reckon, would have looked at Bournemouth, Chelsea, Arsenal. Bournemouth away, don't forget how well Bournemouth were playing. Mm. Chelsea at home, we know what Chelsea are like. Arsenal away, and gone. If we can get 9 points, they're amazing. If we can 7 points, really good. If we can get six, that's probably the absolute minimum we need to get to stay in contention. They got six. You forget, they beat Bournemouth 4-0 away and beat Chelsea 4-1 at home. And I agree with Gorski in that if Alisson doesn't make that mistake, that game finishes 1-1. Even because Arsenal didn't make that many chances, they didn't. They went way more in the FA Cup game.
Yeah,
and Liverpool got away with that.
Trossard gets in at the end because Canate's not there.
They're down to ten. So I mean, I don't. And again, even then,
Diaz was a fullback too, wasn't he?
Well, even then, it still needs a mistake from the goalkeeper to go in.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So that's just one of those things.
It wasn't a 3-1 game.
No, I mean, but having said that, there's not a single person inside that crowd who doesn't think, oh, Arsenal didn't deserve to win that game. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but that's not, you don't always get what you deserve in football or life. Otherwise, I would have many, many pounds.
And also, as well, I think I made the point on Friday that you know, framing the Chelsea game as like referee injustice is pathetic, because Liverpool were clearly the better side and deserve to win that game. I think you've got to say the same argument again for yesterday. You know, Konate gets sent off and you can debate the either yellow, but it wasn't a turning point.
Yeah, sending off made no difference.
Liverpool
to that game, really.
didn't deserve anything, did they?
Unless they lose the league by one goal, then it does.
Okay, then. I want to bring up the Youth Cup now, because there was one Liverpool side that did win this weekend. And I know you weren't there, because obviously you were in North London.
We can't do that whole thing of just beaming from one place to the other.
No.
Even though there aren't many people I know who feels that we can do that.
But anyway, you wrote the match report on it.
I did.
Whether that means you've seen the goals or not.
I have seen the goals, yes.
Great. So yeah, what can you tell us about the Youth Cup win?
Well, what I can tell you is generally, because I actually spoke to Mark Bridge-Wilkinson on Thursday ahead of the game. Went down to the academy and spoke to him. And they hold an awful lot of stock in the Youth Cup. I mean, they just played Manchester United in the under-18s league and got beat 4-3. And I actually did watch that game. And again, it's one of these games where United were clearly the better team, but Liverpool gave themselves a chance, because even with lots of players missing in that one, because they were getting rested for the game on Sunday against Fulham in the Youth Cup, they got a lot about them to come forward. And I think that's something that, when you're at that level, the forwards always attract more interest. That's just the way that it is.
Yeah.
Way that it is. You look at when they won it 5 years ago, it was Bobby Duncan and Paul Glatzel.
He scored at the weekend, by the way.
Did he?
For Swindon, first goal.
Oh, right, there you go. So there you go. So he's at Swindon along with Tom Clayton, who may have played in that game. I don't know. I'm sure he might not have done that, actually. And someone else there, isn't it? Jake Kane. Jake Kane's there as well, isn't he? Yeah. I forgot what my point was now. Oh yeah, so it's the forwards that always that always seem to attract the attention. And again, it's happening. But this time, they are actually
good.
Very good players. You're looking at Trent Cone-Doherty. You're looking at Lewis Kumas, who we've seen are in around the first team. Jaden Danz, who I saw him first play about 18 months ago. And you thought, well, who's this? You know, he's a 16-year-old lad who just come on. Obviously got a bit of football heritage in his family. And he's tall. And he looked like, you could think he's got a little something about him. But in the last 18 months, Mark Wilkinson was saying that he's kind of grown into his body, in the sense that he knows what he can do with it now, you know, because obviously he had a bit of a growth spurt. And he's bringing more people into the game. He's not just about goal scoring, but what he is a goal scorer. He just scores all different types of goals. So he's got 21 in 19 competitive appearances this season. And where that's good is that he started in the 18s. He's obviously been promoted to the 21s. And he scored two or three there already.
He scored a lovely free kick against Arsenal a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and that was in, but they beat, again, that was another example of them having such great firepower. Because you went to that game.
I did.
As you mentioned, that it was a close game until the second half, where Liverpool just took it away because they were taking the chances. And I think Liverpool have got a good chance of winning it, because they do look at that Youth Cup and go, that's the one where we can actually, it's kind of like, it's a good showcase for the players, and also they can find out more about the players, because they're in an extremely competitive environment. Mm. Whereas with the league games, funny, United are out of the Youth Cup, Manchester United, but they got beat by Swindon 2-0. But they're miles ahead in the under 18
table. It's always a good indicator, isn't it, the Youth Cup, as to players who are coming through. You know, anyone who's won that Youth Cup growing up, you know, Michael Owen and Jamie Carragher, you know, even though
the West Ham team that's what, Ferdinand, Lampard,
Joe Cole, possibly. So it is a kind of...
Well, the team, Liverpool team that won it in 2019 had Nico Williams, Reece Williams, Tyler Morton.
Gerald Quanta,
Conor Bradley. Conor Bradley and Gerald Quanta played in 2021 when they lost to Villa. So again, that's another... There you go. They didn't quite get there, but they got, in terms of getting over the line, but they got to the final. And they've obviously taken an awful lot from that, so you do get a proper glimpse of what could come in the Youth Cup. So if Liverpool can carry on going, you're looking at, as I say, Cone-Doherty, they really like, Danz, Traoré, not mentioned him, he's the guy that, he's only 16, isn't he? They got two centre-backs, Carter Pennington, who's only, I think he's only 16, and Amar Nalo, he's one from West Ham, and he's just, I say recently, could have been the last couple of months, he's turned 17, so he's a place you can keep an eye on, because if they're doing it at that level, in those high pressure situations, then there's nothing stopping them coming in and doing it in the first team. But again, this goes back to the club's not going to be there anymore. It's an audition. Yeah, and what's going to happen? What's going to happen with the new manager, whoever that is?
Well, they need a Vita Matos as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Obviously, he's leaving the connector, as they call him, between the academy and the senior ranks. his work's been vital for Klopp, really, just to see what's in his ranks. So they need a replacement for him.
And Linders did that initially, didn't he?
Which is why he played a big part, didn't he, in getting Matos in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beyond that, we've got Endo and Salah to be back next time. Yes, that's good. The pitch. Maybe we'll see a couple of the kids in training this week as well. But yeah, Endo, was it? Who did they get knocked out?
Iran. They got beat. I wasn't at the game.
No.
I didn't. I was too busy doing all the work. They played Iran and got beat 2-1 in the 96th minute, wasn't it? In 6 minutes into injury time, penalty, which. It's an interesting one because I say it's interesting, I didn't watch it. But it only made a difference for one game for Liverpool, didn't it? Because the final would have been next week anyway, and Endo wouldn't have been available had they got there.
He was in good form, though, wasn't he, before he went? I remember thinking he's going, it's just the wrong time. He's probably one of the first names on the team sheet there. And then,
he said it himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
And you can kind of help solve a little bit of problem with the midfield stuff we were talking before. Bring him in. You could push McAllister a bit further forward, move Curtis across. But then there's a lot of other things that they can do because they don't necessarily then have to have McAllister as the number six.
And with Salah, we've obviously seen quite a few updates on social media of him training at the AXA. I think 3 weeks takes him to this Thursday. So he could maybe make the bench if he's on track for his return. And he is historically a fast healer.
Yeah.
Do you reckon Liverpool needs to be a bit patient with him, considering he's getting on a bit, or throw him straight back into it?
I don't know, because
getting on a bit?
I wouldn't...
Well, it's the first time he's been out for that length of time in pretty much his entire Liverpool career, apart from when he did the shoulder, but that was going into a World Cup.
I think he's the sort of player, he's just a little bit of almost a freak of nature, isn't he, where you think he'd probably be fine to go straight back into the starting 11, but I don't think they need to, really. I think Burnley at home should be manageable enough for them to get by without him, and it would be nice to see him on the bench. But I think he's still doing laps at the AXA, hasn't he? He's been doing that for like a month.
He's Arteta with him there as well.
I'm sure we'll get another little update in the next coming days of him just still out there running about, but yeah, it'd be good to see him back, wouldn't it? You know, I think Liverpool have done well to get to over a month before you finally say the phrase, they miss Salah there. But they missed him yesterday, and don't think necessarily he will be massively needed against Burnley, but it'd be nice if he was available and get him on the bench and maybe get him some minutes, but we'll see.
Perfect. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Join us again on Friday. We'll be looking at that Burnley game. Maybe Brentford pull off a shock. We'll come back in midweek as well. We shall see. I'm sure we'll all have our Brentford shirts on tonight, cheering on Boy of Liverpool fan.
I don't own any football shirts.
Do you not?
No.
Not even a Brentford one?
No, not in Brentford. Not Man City one, not Liverpool one. Well, not a recent one anyway.
You sold your Everton one, didn't you?
I gave the Everton one away to charity. So that was Tony Hibbert's match worn shirt in 2007.
I was only messing when I said
I need to say that. Yeah, David Moyes gave us a... Everybody who covered Everton at the time, 2007, a shirt, and I gave it away to charity because I'm nice.
Well, what a lovely note to finish on. But yeah, join us on Friday. We'll be looking ahead to the Burnley game. Thanks. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.